Health can be that you are working for the justice of others. Health can be that you navigate conflict better. Health can be that you have an empathetic mindset towards other people and what they're going through. And I think health can also be strength.
Hey there, and welcome to Work is Third. I'm your host, Dawn Hunter, and I'm so glad you're here. What if the way that we think about health is way too narrow? My guest today, Jen Fry, is a conflict resolution coach, speaker, and author who has a lot to say about what it actually takes to thrive, from navigating hard conversations at work to understanding that we don't all actually have the same 24 hours, to what it looks like to be strong enough to carry your own bags, literally. This conversation is wide-ranging, honest, and a little feisty. You're going to love it. Let's get into it. Hello, Jen, and welcome to Work is Third.
Hey, Dawn. Thank you for having me.
I'm really glad you're here. I've been following you now on social media, so I'm really excited because I think this is going to be a fun conversation. And to kick us off, I'm hoping you can share a word to describe how you're doing today.
I would say focused.
Okay. Why focused?
You know, I have ADHD and your girl is all over the place usually. And I feel like today I've gotten some really good stuff to kind of help me get going, because I think for me, the problem I have is getting started with stuff. Like when I'm in it, I am in it. But it's like getting the right. It's almost like you're stuck in mud trying to figure it out. And so I own a tech company and we're doing this really big push for the World Cup. And I want to record TikTok videos. But the problem is that like I need some good scripts, so I'm not saying the same things over and over again, or like going and doing extensive research. And I've actually found that Claude has given me some really good scripts compared to ChatGPT. And so like different options of scripts and energetic, informational, but like the information in it is solid, which makes me want to record because it's such good information, as opposed to me trying to write up the script and being like, we'll see what we get. So I'm really excited about these.
I'm excited for you and for producing content, which I get a lot of joy out of myself. But I'm curious, do you feel like Claude is giving you better scripts because it knows you better? Like, I don't know how much you used Claude versus chat, right? So like, does it know you better?
So here's a very fascinating thing, yeah, is that I use 90% ChatGPT. And I was actually talking with my chief of staff about this. I had my tech platform, I tried for a second to move it over to Claude, but it was a little higher level at the point where I couldn't really do it. So I had to pull it back to what it's on. But I don't think Claude has more knowledge than ChatGPT does. I think ChatGPT is like 90% of my knowledge. Claude is like 10%. And what it put out with that 10%, I was like, oh, this is really good detailed stuff. So just kind of one example is ChatGPT is having a hard time finding the World Cup schedule. Like for some reason it can't find the world. Yeah, it's super weird. It keeps being like, once you put the schedule, I'm like, baby, the schedule's been out. Where else Claude, not only does it have the schedule, but it also is adding history to it. So for instance, for the Group L, which has England, Croatia, Panama, and Ghana, it's telling me when the last two times with England, Croatia, when Ghana almost made it to the semifinals, like it gives detailed historical information that ChatGPT can't even find the games, right?
That's good to know. First of all, I'm a creature of habit. And so I use chat. And so now I just use chat.
Yeah, but yeah, yeah.
I know that there's a lot of great things going for Claude. And that's a whole nother conversation. But what I want to go back to is you talked about being an ADHD girly and difficulty getting a task started. So I actually had an aha moment while I was journaling this morning that I really also have a hard time sometimes getting started on a task. But once I'm in it, I'm okay. But I realized I used to think it was because I didn't like the task. But I realized today that it's actually because my mind thinks there's so many other things it needs to be doing. Not because I don't want to do the task.
Yes.
Because my mind is like, if I focus on this, I can't pay attention to anything else. And so I don't want to do that. It doesn't want to do that. And I was like, I've never thought of it until that, like this moment, this morning when I was journaling, I never thought of it that way.
That's fascinating because I think about whenever I get into moments, now I start to be more thoughtful about why I don't want to do the task. And some of it is because I'm like, man, this is going to be a long effort, a long pull. And you kind of psych yourself out. And I don't know about you, but then there have been times where I'm like, this is going to be really hard. And I do it. I'm like, oh, it wasn't that bad. And so I think some of it is like the prepping. And I am excited about doing these scripts because they're such good scripts. Some of the other ones, I've had to spend so much time massaging it that it's taken the joy out of this. Versus this one, now once I figure out how to use this green screen and teleprompter, I'm going to be locked up. I'll probably record all 12 videos tonight to have them done. And so that, I think, is the thing, is that if I have the tools, I can get it going. It's the getting it going for me that tends to be difficult.
Yeah, that makes sense. I also find that one of the things that I have to do is tell myself that I might not get it done today.
Yes.
Because I'm one of those people that once I start on a task, I'm just going to finish it. And that is not always realistic or useful. And so I do. I mean, I've got to go into it saying like, okay, this may be a long task. And if it is, if it's okay if I stop working on it and pick it back up tomorrow. That is hard because this goes back to like college when I had a paper due. I just sat in front of a computer for, 14 hours and wrote a paper. Like I didn't plan
I think
it
that's
out.
Funny. Yeah, like I think that's funny because my chief of staff does like that block schedule stuff and I'm like, I could never. You're telling me once ding, I just move on to something else. Like that's impossible. I would never do that. I'm finishing it. We're in for the long haul. And so I think that's right. When you want to hire people that have a different skill set, that's, I think, a key. When I'm in it, like for instance, I have a 5-minute podcast. And so I like to block out and record. I do it by seasons now. And so I have 8 seasons to go. And, one of the things that once you give me the prompt, I'm really good with it. But I was like, I don't have the bandwidth or understanding to make out seasons of like titles. And so what I did is I put my pitch deck into ChatGPT and said, make me podcast seasons, and made me like 8 podcast seasons with the titles and everything. So now that I have that, I can just talk for 5 minutes on each of these and block out, 2 hours and have the whole season done. And so I can do stuff of when I get going, I'm going, but sometimes it's hard for me just to get those wheels spinning. Cause I'm like, where do I go? What do I start? Versus like, I have this list. And like you said, like I have this long list, which everyone knows I'm not going to get to it all. Like I'm not getting to all this. We all have our list that I'm not getting to this, but I have the hope and prayer that I will.
Listen, for people who are just listening and you're not seeing this, I have a giant notepad that's got like 3-4 columns of information. It's got a square at the bottom with stuff. I mean, it's stupid. And I never get it all done. It's just kind of like there are always all these things in my head. It is just helpful for me to get them out of my head so that I can just focus on the things I need to focus on. I actually was telling somebody, I'm like, if I lost my OneNote or if I lost my notebook, I don't know what I would do with myself. That is just that's a container for my thoughts. That is not my brain.
Well, I think that's the thing is that like, I was like, let me just write down these small things because the small things I need to get done. And so I think like this stuff, 100% agree with you on that. It's like, let me just write down these small innocuous things to get them out of my head.
Yeah, I do that. And it's helpful, but also still a challenge because the list is always growing. And then I get to the point where I'm just like, how do I free myself from what I've created, which is just a lot of pressure to do stuff that I probably actually don't have to do.
Some of it, I try to have the small things on there because I know I'll forget about them and then wake up at like 3 a.m. and be like, oh, I need to do this. Yeah. And so that's why I just try to write down really, it's small and stupid, but I need to have them written down.
Yeah. So I'm glad that's where we started because I think a lot about in my own work, how do I stay organized and how as a business owner now, I always have a million ideas and I can't pursue all of them all at once. And also when we were getting ready to hop on and start recording, you know, you were saying like you were in a flow, you want to get these videos recorded. And I know, like, for me, it's very hard when I'm in a flow, even if I have something else to do, and even if that's important, I'm like, but no, my energy is good right now. I got to keep this going. And it's very hard to make a shift. And so I really relate to that. And I think probably a lot of listeners will, because that's a challenge, right? Is like, how do you pay attention to your energy, honor that, but then also recognize that sometimes you have these external demands on you that say you've got to be doing something else.
Yeah. I mean, 100% agree with you on that. I think for me, like, I'm a night owl. I stay up to crazy hours, 2-3 in the morning working, because when I get on that flow, I'm in the flow. And my friends, my chief of staff, their whole thing is to get me to go to bed earlier. Like, that's the main thing. I just get into that flow state, like you said, and I want to get this work done. And it's like during the day, I don't know about you, but it's like getting it going, because there's just so many different things that can pull my attention, versus at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night, there's really not that much. And I feel like I can get more work done when I am up late at night. And I don't subscribe to that whole wake up at 3 a.m. and do breathing exercises and go put ice cubes in your earlobes and all that stuff. And some people aren't morning people. Some people are night people. And I think that for some odd reason, there's like this shame around night people. Like, it's you, if you're not up at 5 a.m, no, girl, no, I probably just went to sleep 2 hours ago. What are you talking about? And I think it's this fascinating thing in society that the best people are the ones who are up the earliest. And I don't subscribe to that.
I don't subscribe to that either, and haven't since I came out of the womb. I mean, I've always been a night person. And you're right, though. I think we're conditioned from a very young age. This comes up a lot on this podcast, that we're conditioned to behave a certain way. And it's the early bird gets the worm, you know, kind of philosophy. We hear that so much when we're growing up. And then always, too, I remember being told, you know, be to work before your boss arrives and then leave after them. And it's like, or not. I mean, why do I have to do that? You know, it's like you have to, when we recognize that we are not all the same, that we all have our own energy patterns and behaviors and ways that we are optimal, we should design a space for people to be at their optimal self. Not everybody doing the same thing, and not everybody going to work in the morning and being an early bird.
Yeah. You know, one thing I think that was great about my experience when I was coaching at Illinois was that our head coach really subscribed to that. I could never beat him into the office. I'm in at 6:30, he's in there. And we had some staff that right after practice would leave. You would have Dave Niffen, who was the assistant, who he would come in at maybe 1 o'clock, but he's working till 11, right? Like, there was this idea of get your work done. And I really appreciate that. Niff was not a morning person. And so we would do stuff at 11, 12 o'clock at night. And so I appreciate the flexibility to allow people to get the job done the way they felt that they need to get the job done, not this whole be in the office at 5 or 6, don't leave till 6 or 7, like all of that, just whatever's going to get the work done. Trust that you are hiring humans that will get the work done on their time period, even if it's not yours.
Yeah. And I think it's hard. I don't know why it's hard, actually. It is hard for organizations to get to a spot where they recognize that they have to design work around employee strengths and not just around some arbitrary norms or standards about what a workplace should be. I mean, we're all like, everybody, you get a 9 to 5, right? I mean, we have a famous song about 9 to 5s, but why? Yep. 9 to 5 doesn't work for everybody.
Mm-mm. It doesn't. I mean, even like the 9 to 5 of when you have government buildings open or dentists or OBGYNs, like, people have jobs that they can't come to the dentist between 9 and 5. Why are, you know, people can't go and get their license before 5? Why can't we have these extended hours on some days to meet people where they're going to be versus they're having to take vacation or something like that just to come because those are the only hours you have open?
I'm so glad you said that, because that is such a huge challenge. You know, I work in the public health field. One of the things we talk about are, what are systemic barriers to people being healthy? Well, work is a barrier to health in some ways, because like you're saying, one example of that is if I need to see a doctor, but their hours are the same as my work hours, I might not be able to see the doctor. And even if I have the time off, what if I don't have transportation? Or, you know, what if I don't have health insurance, right? There's all these reasons that people can't get the care that they need. But one of the main ones is like work is not aligned with our needs as human beings at all.
I mean, going to what you're talking about, the transportation. So I travel a lot as a speaker. And with that, I try and take public transportation as much as possible. Like I enjoy seeing the city from just a different viewpoint and versus just Ubering every single place. And sometimes where you're at, the train's going to be faster because of traffic. And so I take public transportation all the time. And whenever people try and say, what's the old adage, we all have the same 24 hours. No, you've never ridden public transportation. Whenever I book an Airbnb, I always Google to see where the closest train or bus stop is to take it. Like I'm going to Austin for South By, and I'm trying to find places that at least have a 20 or 30 minute bus ride. Like that doesn't bother me. And whenever people say that we all have the same 24, I'm like, you haven't taken public transportation where the bus only goes on the 5 and the 45, right? Like you haven't done that where you have to maybe be at work 30 minutes early because that is the only bus that you could take. Like you haven't done that. You haven't had to carry a bunch of crap onto a bus and then make connectors and all of that stuff. And so the transportation part, I think, is a huge hindrance because if a bus is late, you're late, and then you potentially are missing your appointment. And it's interesting, right? You can wait an hour for your appointment, but if you're over 10 minutes late, you ain't got an appointment anymore.
Right. I love public transportation. And I also, when I travel, if it's feasible, I do it. But I also know from early in my days, I was a child protective services worker. And so I worked with children and families. And we had parents who didn't have cars, right? They had to take public transportation to get to their jobs or wherever they needed to go. And I remember I had a mother who, you know, we pushed her, you got to have a job, you got to do this, you got to do that. And she had a job, I think it was at Burger King, and she had to take a couple of different buses to get there. It was like an hour long commute to get to a job that was paying her like $7 an hour.
Yep.
And then she's got the same commute home. And then she's also got to take care of her kids, or somebody's taking care of her kids during the day. And I think it's like, it's unrealistic to expect that people are going to thrive under those kinds of circumstances.
Right. And I think also the thing about it is that if one bus is late, your whole schedule is screwed up. Your whole schedule. And you might now be 30 minutes late to work. And now do I do a $15 Uber? Well, that's 2 hours of work. And do I go then? I think all of those things that you have to think about, I think are really important. And people don't think about that aspect. Well, you know, go get a job. It's like when they talk about homeless people, if they just go get a job, okay, now they make $8 an hour. Okay, what now? Where are they living? What are they doing? They're making $8 an hour. They're making $16,000 a year. They don't, right? You all don't want to pay people more who have fast food because you think it's beneath people. So you don't want to pay them $15. So they're making $16,000. Where are they going to live? Where are they going to buy? Like, what are we doing here? And so I think that's the thing about it is that the get the job. Like, I can understand why some homeless people panhandle because to get the job, to get the apartment, to pay the utilities, all of it is so expensive. And it's like, they're picking their stress. And I mean, I could go on and on about how many of them are there because of mental and physical abuse, right? Like drugs are not the beginning many times. Many times are a way to cover what's going on. I mean, I remember I was in Cleveland and I was walking from the train stop. And there were these two homeless guys. One was standing and one had no legs and was in a wheelchair. And they were like fighting and arguing. And the guy with the no legs in the wheelchair like jumps out of the chair to beat this standing guy's butt. And I'll never forget the standing guy was like, man, you don't know. I just lost my mom. And I'm sitting there thinking like how hard that must be. You've lost your mom. You potentially can't afford to go there. Like all this trauma. Like, how do you deal with all of the manifestations of it? We don't have free healthcare. We don't have free medical care. So things that could potentially help people get healthy, they don't have access to. So what do you expect them to do in that situation?
Right. And it makes me think of like the bigger question of values. I was just talking to somebody else. We were recording and we were talking about living in alignment with your values. And that applies for us as individuals. So, you know, like we both have this passion for, it sounds like, wanting to help other people and wanting to really understand like what are challenges that people face. But we also have to live our values as organizations. And so it's like we have an opportunity as leaders and as organizations in the work that we do to make a difference in addressing some of these barriers that we're talking about. But a lot of organizations don't do that. And I think it's because it's, you know, you don't actually value the things sometimes that you say you value.
I think because there are going to be times where it's hard to live in those values and people don't want to have to like have the conversation, right? Like sometimes it's going to be hard where, I don't know, maybe you have a rule about missing work, but there's a mom with a sick kid, right? Like you have to have those type of conversations and stuff. And I think that people don't like gray areas and it makes sense. But you have to be able to think about those values and you have to be willing, if you're a person in charge, to take the heat that comes with the values. And some people don't like heat, right? So like heat is, yes, I know we have a rule, but this single mom has kids and she's had a great work history and she's done all this amazing stuff and we're going to work with her. And so, you know, I have an intern right now who his communication just hasn't been good. And it would be easy for me to just say, nope, we're not going to work with them. And so I had to call him like, don't disappoint me, but also like, don't disappoint yourself. Like you have great ideas and thoughts. The biggest issue is you just don't communicate well. I was like, don't disappoint yourself. Like you have such a great opportunity and you just don't want to text and say, hey, I can't have this on this date because you're so like worried about reaction. The reaction is always going to be worse when you don't communicate versus when you do communicate.
I'm curious what the response was because my husband sometimes has that same anxiety about having conversations. And actually, this actually is a good segue into what you do with Gen Fry Talks, right? Is helping people to navigate these spaces of conflict. Yeah. But I'm curious about what your intern's response was.
Well, so let me take a step back. So the first thing is, like I said, I don't micromanage. I'm not finna to be texting you and like, where's it at? I've told you, you gave me the deadline. I'm not about to micromanage. We'll have the conversation when we have it. And so I think that's the first thing I've learned is that the conversation is going to be had. I don't move on without the conversation being had. My chief of staff and I, if we get into an argument, we know we're going to have the conversation. So that's why I don't do that hiding away from it. And it's like the elephant in the room that everyone's ignoring. No, we're going to have the conversation. And so when he emailed me, I emailed him back and I wasn't hiding what it was. And I said, I'm very disappointed. We'll talk about this when we meet. So I didn't do the whole like passive aggressive. Okay, fine. And then when he gets on there, have the conversation. No, I want this person to go in knowing we're going to have the conversation. I don't think it's fair to have like this power hierarchy where I know what I'm going to talk to him about, but I don't say it because I'm hiding it from him. Right? Because so many people will do that. So many people will pretend that everything's fine in email. And then when the phone call happens or the whatever it is, then it comes out. No, I was honest. Like, this is what we're going to talk about. So, you know, going in, there's no surprises. I don't want you to be surprised. And so I think that's kind of the next step is that there is no surprises. And the next thing about it is that I'm a very direct person and I don't believe in all of those platitudes when you have to deliver hard stuff. So I'm not going to be sitting here being like, so Dawn, how's the dog? How's your brother? How's your mom? You're sitting there like, yeah, everything's fine. Like there's no point of that. And so I think a lot of people, you know, like it was like the feedback sandwich where it's like you're supposed to have like compliment this and this. The problem is people have taken that from a single McDonald's burger, right? Bread, meat, bread. They've taken it from that to it being there's a restaurant that I've been to years ago called Claim Jumper. And Claim Jumper's portions were like massive proportions. And now people have like claim jumper feedback where it's like bread, lettuce, tomato, onion, special sauce, cheese, extra cheese, double the bacon, triple the bacon, the feedback, meat, bacon, And so you have this little thing in the middle of all of this. People don't care about this. People care about that. So get to it so they can emote, they can figure it out, they can do whatever it is. And I don't think people get to it faster. So when the intern came, I literally was like, and I saw he was in his car, so I knew he was at his like other job. And I just was like, what's going on with this time thing? And he was very apologetic. He was like, I'm sorry. You know, I thought my other job would give me a schedule. I said, I understand that, but you have to communicate earlier. I said, had you told me on Saturday, Jen, I can't have this Sunday, I would have said, cool, what day can you have it? I wouldn't have cared, but you're not communicating. You can't tell me you're going to have something on Sunday and then show up Wednesday. Like that doesn't, it's not acceptable. And so I saw where he was and I was like, are you at work? And he was like, oh, I'm on my break. I was like, you need to use your break to break. Like you don't need to use your break to be yelled at. I said, I'll yell at you later. I said, use your break to break. I was like, what time do you get off? He said, 8. I said, fine. I said, once you get done, rest, go get something to eat, take a shower, and then we can convene again. And so I gave him space and time. He wasn't prepared. The conversation wouldn't have gone the way, right? And so then he came on, he was at home. We were able to have a really great conversation because there was empathy, but there was also like, this stuff ain't going to rock anymore. And so I think the thing is that people just are so afraid of people emoting that they wait so long and then the emotions that they were afraid of actually end up happening. Mm. And it's like the thing you didn't want happened because instead of telling me on Monday you couldn't be at the event on Saturday, you tell me on Friday. I'm now trying to figure out what I'm going to do. I have to figure out logistics. Of course I'm going to be angrier. And then what people will say is like, well, see, this is why I didn't want to tell you. My man, you told me 12 hours before the situation when you've known for 5 days. Like, no. And so people don't want the reaction, but they cause the reaction because they're so afraid of someone emoting. And I've gotten over that. And I'm like, okay, I have to give them bad news. And so I have told like, hey, Don, I have to give you this news. I know you're going to be upset. I get it. And I give it and I just stay silent. And then whenever you want to reconvene, we'll talk about it. But I'm going to tell you early so that you can be prepared.
So you said a lot of things that I want to follow up on. The first is that I love the directness. There is nothing I hate more than the kind of leader who, I say leader loosely, will send a message to say, we got to meet, but then they won't say what you got to meet about. That is so unhealthy. Like, just be direct.
So unhealthy.
Tell people why you're meeting. Don't create unnecessary conflict. Right. And so be direct. I love that. And then you called it the feedback sandwich. Research also shows that the good stuff doesn't matter because people hear the one negative thing and that's what they remember from the conversation anyways. So don't waste your time on that. You have plenty of time to give them praise and recognition in other ways. Like focus on the thing that needs to improve, be kind and empathetic about it. And then the other important thing that I love that you said is give them time to process. So many people want a response or an answer or a reaction right away. And everyone doesn't work that way. So it's good to be able to like give someone feedback and say, we don't have to talk about this right now, but we do need to come to some resolution. Right. Yes. And that's a good leadership tip. Not enough people do that.
Because they don't like silence. They don't like someone emoting. And so because of that, literally, they will do everything possible for that not to happen. Are you okay, Don? Are you okay? Is everything good? No, you just gave me horrible news. Like, you got to let me process. And so it's the thing about it is that when that happens, it's not the other person. It's the person giving the information. They got to self-regulate. They got to sit and chill. They got to be okay with some silence. Like, they have to be okay with all of that versus rushing the person and making it worse because now they're rushing them, rushing the person for it to be on their timeline, not the other person's timeline.
So this is what you're doing, right, as part of Jen Fry Talks, is helping people to navigate these difficult spaces. How do people overcome that barrier that they have personally saying, like, I'm so anxious about this potential thing that might or might not happen with my supervisor or whoever, that now I can't do it? that I, now I'm paralyzed in action. How do you help people to address that barrier to conflict?
Well, I think the thing is that some of it is we make up these really in-depth stories in our mind, and they're so in-depth that they feel real. And we forget that they're not real. And so many times people, it's like, well, what are you really afraid of? And if the thing you're afraid of happens, what will you do then? Okay, you get fired. And I've been fired twice. I feel like many people have. Okay, you get fired. What then? And getting them to talk through it. And so many people have this idea of, well, what if there's a consequence? And I'm like, you're kind of already living a consequence where you're being held hostage by your emotions, right? Like you're already, isn't that a consequence that every day you walk in and you are biting your nails down to the bed because you're so nervous and scared and anxious, and your friends and family don't get to see the good you, they get to see the anxious you all the time. That's already kind of a consequence. And so I think that's one of the things is like, we think that the firing or the pip or whatever is the consequence, but I feel like being held hostage in this situation where you always have a knot in your stomach, you're afraid to go to work, you're afraid to see your email. Whenever an email from your boss pops up, you immediately have a trauma response. That to me seems like a pretty big consequence.
That is a big consequence. And none of us are taught to frame it that way, right? That, especially for those of us who are anxious, I'm an anxious person, right?
You're 100%, me too.
Yeah, you're constantly living in the future, but like that is a consequence in and of itself, is that you're creating this unnecessary stress for you. And then you made me think, you know, one of the other challenges is like the pip you said, right? Nobody wants to be on a pip, but like, mm-hmm. but also there's some resolution in having it. You know what you need to do to improve, but I think people still get stuck in not accepting the consequence, right?
Yeah.
Like they're still stuck back in the everything that happened before. And it's like, no, this is the current reality. So you got to let that go and you have to shift. Right? You have to shift if you want a positive consequence. You've got to make some changes.
Yeah, I would probably say one of my, I don't know if you'd say it, one of my worst lines, but whenever people, like my ex, he used to complain about his job, and I would tell him, it obviously doesn't suck that bad if you're not willing to do X, Y, and Z. It can't suck too bad. And that's why I tell people, like I, you know, from being a coach, I give a lot of help to volleyball parents. And they'll be like, my kid's distraught. They don't know what they're doing. I'm like, well, have them ask the coach. No, they're afraid of the consequence. Okay, they can't be too distraught. They don't care too much then. Like, they're already sitting the bench. What other consequence you think is going to happen? They got to clean the floor? Like, they already got the consequence. So what now? And so that's why I tell people, like, it doesn't suck too bad. Because when it's going to suck really bad, that's when you're going to make the change.
This reminds me, I read the quote. This quote, the first time I read it, it was like in a magazine on an airplane back in the day. But it was the same idea, which is you will stay the same until, what is it? Till the pain of change is less than the pain of staying the same. It's like it can't be too bad or you would change. Right. Mm-hmm. And I wholly believe that it must be something okay about it if you are not making a change to feel better.
Yeah. And change is hard and it's ugly and it can be long and you can feel regret because it's like, yeah, well, at least I knew this and that. And I'm just like, I get that. I get it all. And there comes to be a point where, like I tell the parents, them sitting the bench sucks more than them asking why they are. And they're going to have to figure it out. And if they don't, it's not your job to figure it out for them. It's your job to just be like, well, when it sucks enough, you'll say something. And so that's kind of how I live is when, you know, I lost 42 pounds and I am a person that I work out a lot. I wouldn't say that my eating habits is the best. I'm trying, right? But you know, them Girl Scout cookie dealers got me for a few boxes. And I, last year this time, I just was unhappy with my weight. I'm 45 and the weight just wouldn't come off. So I decided I'm going to try the GLP. I'm going to try it. And I was waiting if Kaiser would finally pay for it. And them jerks didn't. Kaiser, I hate you. But they didn't. And so I was like, the pain of it was worth, was the pain of my pocket. I wanted more than the pain of the wait. And I did it. And it was the best decision I could have done. And I feel comfortable in my body again. But like, I think so many people would be like, well, I'm not, you know, I'm not going to pay for it. I'm just going to wait. And they're okay being uncomfortable. I got to the point of like, nah, I'd rather risk it because of how uncomfortable I am. And I also, because of the work I do, pay attention to myself and my body when uncomfortable things are happening. And I think in some ways that helps me navigate through them because I'm able to acknowledge what's going on versus it being that this is uncomfortable and not being able to acknowledge why or what or anything behind it. And I think so many people don't realize that when they're in their situations, it's just uncomfortable and you have to just ride through it to get through it.
Discomfort is where growth occurs.
Yeah.
But people don't always want to stay there. And I think it's harder in today's times because we're so used to instant gratification and constant distraction that it's hard to sit, to be in a long period of like prolonged feeling of discomfort because we're just not used to prolonged anything anymore.
Where all you have at the end is just hope. You don't even know if it's going to happen, right? That's what even makes it worse is that it's different if you're like, I know if I do X, this is going to be at the end of the rainbow. It's very different when it's like, I know I'm going to be doing X and hopefully that thing is at the end of the rainbow. But I don't even really know. That's when it's a lot harder.
I was thinking about my own journey. I'm just like a few years older than you and I work out a lot. I feel like often I'm continuing to work hard to just maintain. I kind of, you know, go back and forth with myself sometimes about whether or not I should keep up the schedule that I have. And then ultimately it came down to this decision where I said to myself, if I really am committed to fitness or I really am committed to health, then I will just do this. It'll just be part of my life. If you're making a commitment and you really mean it, you will do the thing. You will make it part of your life. Otherwise, you're not committed.
Yeah, I am. I have a Peloton, so I ride. I do strength conditioning. And for me, it's also about I live by myself. I need to be strong. I have a 3-story house and I turned my 3rd bedroom into an Airbnb, which meant I had to carry a small fridge up from my car. So 4 flights of stairs. Right? I had to carry a fridge, microwave, all this stuff, the shelving unit. And I have to be strong for myself. So even though I lost the weight for the look and the feel, I still need to be strong for myself and lifting weights to maintain that strength. And I think sometimes people, when they lose weight, once they get to the look, and I'm like, but you still need to be strong. You still need to be able to carry your bags and stuff of that nature.
Well, I say this all the time. My grandpa used to say, if you don't move, you won't move. I'm not trying to be 80 and not able to move. God willing, I live that old. But also, it's like, yeah, you move because you want to be as strong and as healthy as you need to be to have a quality of life, period. Yeah.
It's so important. I don't think people understand that. Like, I travel a lot. I need to be able to pick my bag up and put it up there. Like, I need to be able to do these things on my own without always depending on someone. Like I said, my bedroom's on the 2nd floor. So I have to take it up 2-3 flights of stairs from the car. So I have to be able to be strong enough to do that.
So I'm curious about how we tie some of these things together, because we started talking about justice, social justice in some ways. We've talked a little bit about conflict and we've talked a little bit about commitment to a version of ourselves that is better. You know, what are you seeing as a thread in this conversation that we're having?
I think a thread is that we have to look at health in very multifaceted ways. Right. Health can be that you are working for the justice of others. Health can be that you navigate conflict better. Health can be that you have an empathetic mindset towards other people and what they're going through. And I think health can also be strength. And so I just think it means that we look at health in just a bunch of different dimensions and definitions.
That's been my whole approach to life, is that everything is health. Everything is part of our health. Just like you're saying. Well, we've had a wide-ranging conversation. We've talked a lot about taking care of our emotional well-being, among other things. So I'd love to ask you the 4 questions I ask every guest that are related. The first question is, what is something that's easy for you to say yes to?
Anytime a friend needs me. I'll be on, like, my friends know I'll be on a flight tomorrow. If they call and they're like, hey, I need you, I'll book a flight. That's one of the, I think, the best things about having my own company is I can just book a flight with a quickness.
I think that's probably the most common answer on this show is, like, when someone you care about needs you.
Yeah.
It's easy to say yes to that.
Yeah.
What is something that's hard for you to say no to?
Going to sleep late. I'd be going to sleep at 3 a.m. People would look at me like I got three heads. 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, my best friend goes to sleep at 9 p.m., 8:30. Like, she's in bed. It would be impossible. I've done where I'm like sick or I've been traveling a lot, but other than that, I can't.
I do a yoga class that gets out at 8:30. So, like, that's just the idea of being in bed by 9 is just, I can't even conceive of it.
I literally am like, oh, it's 8:30. I have 4 more hours of work, maybe 5. Like, that's how I think about it.
Yeah. So when it comes to self-care, rest, setting boundaries, living joyfully, what do you do really well?
Having the conversation. I think I've gotten really good at doing that. Like I had said before, I'm in a volleyball moms group. And some of these moms, like, they just feel like they can talk to you however. And I know it's not about me. The ones who are the most defensive, I know are the ones who what I'm saying hits home on them. And there's this one woman that, like, she just kept going at me and at me and at me. And then all of a sudden, like, a few weeks later, I get a friend request from her. And she messages me and she was like, it's divine intervention. I saw you show up on my friends and did all this stuff. And she wanted help with her daughter. And I was like, you were really mean to me. And she was like, yeah, I know I was mean and rude. I just didn't feel like you were hearing me. And I just kept saying, like, you don't get to be mean to me just because you're upset. And so then she was like, okay, well, we're not going to talk about my daughter. There's some stuff I want to tell you. And I finally said, you were mean and rude. You don't get my ear, my time, or my patience. Have a good day. And I think other people would have ignored it or would have not responded or said, and I was like, I want you to understand, you don't get these things from being mean and rude. And so I try and have the conversation, even if it's hard, even if it's uncomfortable, because, like I said before, the consequence of not having it, I think, is worse than the what ifs of having it.
I mean, my favorite definition of boundaries is that you are teaching people how to be in relationship with you.
Yeah.
And one of those things is you tell people how they can talk to you or not talk to you.
Girl, yeah. The way she was talking to me before, I was like, I just thought the pure unadulterated audacity to acknowledge that you treated someone like crap and that they still have to listen to you. I was like, oh, the gall of it to, like, think it's okay with no apology. Cause I've had quite a few of these parents who apologize. And one woman, kind of the same thing. She tags me in this thing and I'm like, you know, I'm the one that you just went after. I'm thinking that. And then she sends me this message and I was like, I screenshot her response. I was like, this was you talking to me. And she was like, you're right. I apologize. She said, I realized I was way more defensive about what you were saying because you were right. And she gave this beautiful apology. She even apologized on the thread. And she and I are cool now. As I've gotten older with this work, I understand reconciliation more, right? I understand it at a better level now. So you're apologizing truthfully and all that. I'm okay with that. But I was just like, you don't get my ear, my time, or my patience after you've been mean. And you're like, yeah, I know I was mean and rude to you. Oh, well. Girl, if you don't get out of my face. And so I've become more honest with those conversations.
Well, I deeply respect that and try to model that as well. And so the last question for you then is, where do you still struggle? Is there anything that you would like to improve on?
I think, like always, the point between the response, right? Hearing it and the response. That's where I still struggle and work on it is the response. And so, you know, my chief of staff is always like, you don't have to respond to some of these trolls. Some of them, I got the time and you are going to get all the smoke. But then I might delete the message, be like, because now I've gotten to know, like, okay, if I say this, this is what it's going to cost. And so I've gotten to be more mindful of that versus just giving the smoke. And so I think it's that point, or when it's in person, of having, I need to have a better split second of pausing before I respond.
I mean, that's good advice for us all, right? And yeah. I think it's something we develop as we get older and more experienced. We learn the power of the pause.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I've really loved this conversation. It's been very wide-ranging, so interesting. And I'm curious what you're taking away from it.
I think I'm taking away from it is that health shows up in different ways. And you can be healthy, but not fully involved. You can be healthy and know what's going on, but not have to have everything sitting on your shoulders and always in your mind.
Yeah, I love that. I love that the takeaway is health. Because part of the idea behind this podcast is we have to recognize all of the things that keep us well. And, you know, work is just one part of it. So who are we outside of that setting? How do we interact and connect with other people? How do we support our community and the people around us? And we talked about all of that today.
Yeah. And, you know, there was a post I read on Instagram. It said, if you want to be part of a village, you have to be a villager. And so many people forget that you have to be a villager. And a villager means that you're doing things for other people. Like our neighborhood is a village. We have a group chat. If you need anything, literally, hey, does anyone have any sugar? Does anyone have this? You can go in the group chat. Someone will help you. We pick up each other's packages. The mail people know that if a door doesn't open with a package, you just keep going down the door and somebody will grab them all. That's a part of being a villager. And I think in this day and age, people forget that you also have to put in work to be part of the village, to get the fruits of the labor. You just can't be a villager in a village and you're not giving something.
Let us all be villagers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Absolutely. Jen, thank you so much for being here and sharing your wisdom and perspective and candor. It's been so fun.
It's been a great time. And Don, can I also plug my little book before we leave?
Yes, please do.
I have my book, I Said No, How to Have a Backbone and Boundaries Without Being a Jerk. If you go on my website, you can buy it from me and you'll get Herbie Hancock with a sticker and a bookmark, or you can buy it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, but it's a really good book. So please read it to help with yourself.
We are going to put that link in the show notes. I need to go and get my own copy. I love saying no. I love empowering people to also say no.
I said no. Yep.
I said no. Thanks again for being here. Glad to share your book and your work and you and your perspective with the world. Thanks for sharing your story.
Appreciate you, Don. This has been fun. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here and listening to Work is Third. If this conversation sparked something for you, please share it. And I'd love to know, where are you redefining health in your own life? You can find me at workisthird.com. And remember, put yourself first.